Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting the Islamic State's reign in Mosul is nearing an end. Colonel Pat Work is among the U.S. Army advisors assisting Iraqi forces.
ISIS had 2.5 years to prepare a defense of Mosul, and it's a vast city with a large population. And they put together a formidable defense, and it was a defense that any army would have a hard time dealing with. But the Iraqi security forces have doggedly continued to attack. And over the last 120 days on the west side of the city, they've gotten to the point where they have ISIS into its final pocket of defense. And they're stepping on his throat, ready to finish him off. And that's playing out right over our shoulder there that you've seen behind us.
The pending victory in Mosul, however, is tempered by the reality that the war with the Islamic State is not over in Iraq. Militants continue hiding out in Iraqi-controlled territory, poised to strike again. The Islamic State still holds large parts of Iraq, including parts of Anbar province. Chinese President Xi Jinping gave Hong Kong a stern warning Saturday as he oversaw the swearing-in ceremony for the city's new leader, telling its residents that Beijing will not tolerate attempts to challenge its authority. After swearing in, Beijing approved Carrie Lam as the Hong Kong new executive. She said he was looking to the new administration in Hong Kong to heal the divide in society, create new opportunities, and address economic and livelihood issues. Hundreds of police stood watch for the anniversary as pro-democracy activists and pro-Beijing groups marched through Hong Kong. And police in the U.S. state of Arkansas say 25 people were shot early Saturday at a hip-hop concert at a nightclub in the state capital, Little Rock. Police say the shooting resulted from an argument between two concert-goers and was not terror-related. All of the 25 shot are expected to survive. This is VOA News. President Trump says the U.S. has run out of patience with North Korea. His comment came as he met with South Korean President Moon Jae-in at the White House Friday. President Moon is keeping the door open to talks with the North while supporting continued sanctions on Pyongyang.
The North Korean nuclear issue must be resolved without fail. North Korea should by no means underestimate the firm commitment of Korea and the U.S. in this regard.
Mr. Trump said President Moon differ over how much to pressure the North into giving up its weapons program, but they presented a unified front. The interior ministers of France, Germany, and Italy will be in Paris on Sunday to help Italy deal with masses of migrants arriving on its shores. Italy has so far taken in 82,000 migrants this year, as the country has become the main point of arrival to Europe. World leaders from the past and present gathered in the French city of Strasbourg Saturday to honor the late former German Chancellor Helmut Kohl, who was credited with forging the reunification of East and West Germany in 1990. Kohl, who died on June 16th at the age of 87, is the first national leader to be honored with a ceremony at the European Parliament seat in Strasbourg. German Chancellor Angela Merkel spoke through an interpreter.
Today we are saying goodbye to Helmut Kohl, the Chancellor of German Unity, the winner of the Charlemagne Prize and an honorary citizen of Europe.
He, who as
a student of history as a young man, has now himself a place in the books of history.
Merkel, who served under Kohl as a minister in the 1990s, said she had plenty of stories to tell about Kohl, but all that paled in comparison to his life's achievements. French far-right leader Marine Le Pen is facing charges of misusing European Union funds to pay for parliamentary assistance based in France. During a court appearance in Paris, Le Pen was given preliminary charges, including a breach of trust over the salaries of two of her parliamentary aides when she served at the European Parliament. Le Pen denied any wrongdoing in the case, saying the allegations are politically motivated. And former U.S. President Barack Obama returned to Jakarta, the Indonesian city that he called home for part of his childhood, to deliver the keynote speech at the 4th Congress of Indonesian Diaspora. Obama drew parallels between the two diverse, multi-ethnic nations of the U.S. and Indonesia and called on young people to fight for democracy there. Organizers say the conference where Obama spoke aims to unite people of Indonesian heritage from all over the world. For more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
There's nothing very much seriously flawed about policies. There would be areas where the implementation was not as effective as it would have been.
The South African ruling party, the African National Congress, or ANC, launches a six-day policy conference.
So what we find is that the level of trust in politicians is generally very low compared to other institutions and individuals in the country.
A latest opinion poll shows that Kenyans don't trust their politicians.
There are fears that there is this ritual killing affecting mainly people with albinism, the young, and mostly female.
And the Electoral Commission of Swaziland expresses concern about the spike in ritual murders ahead of elections in the kingdom. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The South African ruling party, the African National Congress, or ANC, launched its six-day policy conference in Nasrec, south of Johannesburg, Friday. South Africans say fighting corruption should be high on the agenda. It comes after President Jacob Zuma is accused of political corruption for allowing his business friends to have advantage regarding government contract. Meanwhile, at the launch of the conference, embattled President Zuma said he welcomes calls for inquiry into allegations of corruption. To learn more about the ANC policy conference, I reach Gwede Mantashe, General Secretary of the South African ruling party, the African National Congress.
Every 5 years, the ANC goes into details reviewing its policies, and they're broken into various subsections guided by the subcommittees of the National Executive Committee. But the first 2 days, we'll look into the health of the organization, weaknesses, challenges facing the African National Congress.
For the last 5 years, can you say that the ANC's policies have effectively addressed the needs and concerns of South Africans?
There's nothing very much seriously flawed about policies. There would be areas where the implementation was not as effective as it would have been. And at the same time, South Africa is working within a global village, and therefore it's not a state of its own standing aside and dealing with its own challenges. When there are challenges globally, the ANC and South Africa become part of that global village and face the same problems.
Critics of the ANC have said that the ANC keeps on promising service delivery but has yet to meet some of those challenges, except the big cities, the townships, are woefully lacking. How do you respond to them, Mr. Mantashe?
The real of the matter, those people are talking narrative rather than science, because even in 1994, only 39% of South Africans had access to electricity, and today it's 86%. And if in 1994, only 42% of South Africans had access to clean tapped water, and today that is 94%. If the ANC has delivered over 4 million houses to the bottom end of society, if in 1994, 150,000 plus students in university, today is 850,000. Therefore, anybody who talk of trying to find a fault on service delivery is busy talking to a narrative than facts.
Mr. Mantashe, what should South Africans expect after this policy conference ends?
They must expect the ANC that is committing itself to serve society, lead society, and do what it does best, transforming this society that is in the process of being transformed from an apartheid colonial state into a national democratic state.
Some have called repeatedly for the ANC to get rid of President Jacob Zuma, and they said the refusal of the ANC to do that basically undermines the trust that they have or they repose in the ANC. What do you say to that?
I don't know whether that is failure Because I can ask you if we can all shout in the sidelines that please fire President Trump, whether we run into doing that or would you use American processes to deal with that issue? And why is there an expectation that the ANC has no policies, it has no processes, if there is an outcry, mainly led by opposition forces, we must run and remove President Zuma?
Looking at some of the policies the ANC structures will be looking at, what would you say is the strongest policy that could come out of this six-day policy conference?
There is a debate on the need to transform the economy, that it cannot continue as if nothing has happened and keep the economy in the hands of white South Africans, 70%, while black South Africans depend on the state for survival. That debate is on. The debate of land, that you cannot allow a situation of the slow redistribution of land so that all South Africans must have access to land and be able to produce food. And in that way, fight poverty actively. That debate is on the table.
Some would say that transforming the economy to move it from white hands to African hands is reverse apartheid. And they think that any policy of that could create tension. What are your views about such criticism?
That argument is an argument of maintaining the status quo. Don't rock the boat. Allow your people to suffer. Because if you say, let's dilute the ownership by one section of society, it's a reverse apartheid. That is actually a blackmail that is aimed at saying, continue suffering, don't bother, one day rain will fall, and therefore be merry.
Gwede Mantashe is the General Secretary of the South African Ruling Party, the African National Congress, or ANC. He spoke with me from Johannesburg. A new poll conducted by Twaweza, a research group, shows that Kenyans do not trust their politicians. According to the study, 66% of Kenyans say they don't trust politicians. However, religious leaders, civil society groups, and the media were all rated high by citizens in the opinion poll. For more, I read Victor Ratting, the Twaweza Senior Program Officer at the Kenyan Division in the capital, Nairobi.
One of the things we were researching on with citizens in Kenya is their trust in religious leaders, the media and civil society, and politicians. So we have basically three groups of non-state actors, government institutions, politicians, and other institutions.
For the politicians, what did you find? What were the response from those that you surveyed?
Okay, so what we find is that the level of trust in politicians is generally very low compared to other institutions and individuals in the country, because we find that for citizens expressing a lot of trust in politicians, what we find is 6% of the general population. Now, 29% of citizens say they have some trust in politicians, while 31% say they have no trust, and 33% no trust at all in politicians in general.
Let's talk about the government institutions. What did you find?
Yeah, so what we have here are other government institutions. For example, we have the judiciary or courts, where the level of trust is slightly higher than what we see being expressed for politicians in general. Now, 25% of citizens say they have a lot of trust in the judiciary, 23% some trust, 32% no trust, and 18% no trust at all. There is also a related, although expected to be independent constitutionally, the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission. 16% of citizens say they have a lot of trust, 36% some trust, 21% no trust, and 18% no trust at all.
I understand from your polling, Kenyans trust the media and religious institutions, not so much as social media platforms. What did you find on that?
That's true. We also had these non-state actors being probed with citizens. And it's the most interesting thing is that the level of trust Kenyans have in religious leaders is very high, because 53% of the Kenyan population says they have a lot of trust in religious leaders, and 36% say they have some trust. 8% say they have no trust, and 4% no trust at all. Now, compared to the Kenyan media, and with reference to the Kenyan media, we specifically told them that this is TV, radio, and newspapers. 44% of citizens say they have a lot of trust. 44% again say they have some trust. Now, put those two together, you find that is 88%. Then up there for religious leader, that comes to about 89%. Now, continuing with Kenyan media, we have 7% saying they have no trust and 2% no trust at all.
Let me ask you about the issue of fighting corruption or graft. There seems to be a discrepancy between those in the cities and in the rural areas. What is the dichotomy here?
Yeah, very interesting results, I have to say, and I'm happy that you have noted that, because it turns out when we ask citizens about the issue of accountability, Kenyans living in the rural areas are being seen to be more active than those in the urban areas. And I think one of the things that we were asking about is, do the youth in your area or county participate in making decisions on development projects by the county government? Now, what do we see? Across the country, 46% of citizens agree. But when you compare the rural and urban respondents, 49% of rural respondents agree compared to 41% of urban respondents. You know, because of devolution, Kenyan youth in the rural areas are probably more in touch with their local leadership, the members of the county assemblies and the governors. So they are probably more involved and probably more active. They are more excited. But in the urban areas, what we may now be thinking about is, what are the youth in the urban areas engaged with? We should start thinking about this, because 8% difference is huge. And the expectation should be, or is, that more people in the urban areas are active compared to those in the rural areas.
Victor Ratting is a senior program officer at the Kenyan division of Twaweza, a research group. He spoke with me from Nairobi. There is controversy over ballot printing for Kenya's upcoming elections. With just over a month to the elections, the National Super Alliance wants the tender cancelled on grounds that President Uhuru Kenyatta, the Jubilee candidate, has links to the Dubai-based firm. But Kenya is likely to plunge into a constitutional crisis should the court cancel the ballot papers tender, according to Attorney General Githu Muigai. Freddy Omulo is a Kenyan journalist. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in Kisumu for more on this controversy.
There is a little dispute over the printing of the ballot papers. It is said that IEBC, the Independent Election and Boundaries Commission, used the wrong procurement procedure in getting a person to print the ballot papers. And so activists and even some lawyers who support the opposition have gone to court to contest this. They want the tender cancelled, even though printing is already going on in Dubai. And there is a possibility that if they cancel that printing tender, then the Electoral Commission will not be in a position to deliver the elections on August 8th. Yeah, and that is going to be a big problem, because the election date in Kenya is cast in stone. It is written in the Constitution, 8th of August every fifth year.
Recent polls have shown that the Kenyan public doesn't trust the Supreme Court, for instance, to handle an election petition should the results be contested by either party. Where does that leave the court? Because if the court is not trusted, then...
I mean, Douglas, it is a real quagmire, if you ask me. People have very low confidence in these various institutions, but these institutions have to conduct these processes. So people are forced to sort of acquiesce, but they are, most of the time, they are very keenly watching every single move. For the last 2 years, The IEBC has, I think it's been the most targeted institutions in terms of lawsuits. So the activists have really been hammering the institution. I don't think there's any other institution. Maybe only the police can compete. Last year, we had a series of weekly protests led by the opposition in which they were pushing for the resignation of the commissioners of the IEBC because of their implication in a bribery scandal. Now, the bribery scandal involved the printer in 2013, which was a British company. The managers and the directors of that British company were actually jailed. Here in Kenya, nothing much happened to them, even in court, until those protests became impossible, and a political solution is what finally drove them out of office. Now, the new crop that is in office has come in, and barely had they settled, these new lawsuits started coming in because they've been doing a lot of shoddy work. So that is what leaves us here in a scenario, in a situation where we don't really know if the IEBC can effectively deliver a free and fair election. And if they don't, people still don't trust the Supreme Court because of the way they conducted the last presidential petition in which they delivered a win for the current president.
To what extent, in your view, is the commission itself ready, apart from these legal challenges? Are they handling the job well?
In terms of the actual logistics, the actual voting and counting, the IEBC is more than ready. And in fact, it is head and shoulders above most electoral commissions across this region in Africa. The actual exercise of an election, that process is usually very smooth, very efficient, and in many cases, transparent.
Fred Omolo is a Kenyan journalist. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kisumu. The Elections and Boundaries Commission of Swaziland has expressed concern about the sharp rise of ritual murders during elections in the Southern African Kingdom. The electoral body has launched a nationwide campaign to educate Swazis in an effort to stop the ritual murders. Swazis are scheduled to go to the polls for the National Assembly elections next year, a date to be determined by King Nswati III. Sacrifices using human body parts, some Swazis believe, could help bring good fortune as well as enable candidates to win elections to parliament. To learn more about the education campaign, I reach Mbonisi Bembe, spokesman for the Elections and Boundaries Commission.
There are fears that there is this ritual killing affecting mainly people with albinism, the young, and mostly female. It's a fear. We haven't had tangible evidence which points that these killings are actually related to elections. However, as a commission, we are concerned. We want to strive for a free, fair, democratic elections, which is not intimidation. So we are trying by all means in our civic and voter education, we're trying to sensitize the nation about the elections, that they should be free, our kids should be free to roam around our streets. And these ritual beliefs are not something which the elections can be won with. So we are trying to emphasize to the nation that please let these practices, if ever they do happen in the name of elections, let them stop.
Talking about education, is the Electoral Commission having any plans of cooperating with security agencies in the country, since although there is no empirical evidence that this is what is happening, and I understand Swazis are aware that killings or ritual murders spike during election period?
Yes, we are engaging most of our stakeholders involving security officers over election issues and other issues which seem to be a threat to peace and order. And we are striving to have this relationship. We are also going to community police, trying to sensitize them over these issues, trying to bring calm in the nation that the 2018 elections are a milestone in the history of the country, as we'll be celebrating 50 years of independence as a country, and we are looking forward into electing a democratic parliament which will take us to 2022, where as a nation we want to have attained a first world status. So we are collaborating with so many of our stakeholders, including non-governmental organizations and the community or CSOs. Yes, we are trying our best with that.
Now, in Bosini, what about religious groups or faith-based groups, including the traditional religious leaders, to engage them as part of this effort to stem the tide of ritual murders during elections?
Yeah, we have actually engaged with the Christian faith leaders, trying to sensitize them that we are having these elections and they are free also to run for elections. But we have not yet gone to our traditional belief leaders. But it is one aspect that we should look into, tapping into it very soon.
When did the Electoral Commission notice that ritual murders usually rise sharply during the election period?
Yeah, we are made aware of this during our civic and voter education sessions, where the nation gives these fears or allegations, and we are still yet to find the correlation between these murders and elections. Like we're saying, it's allegations, it's speculation, but we have said we cannot say or summarily dismiss it as just fears. We are engaging our security agents into looking into these things and finding the correlation.
Imbonisi Bembe is the spokesman for the Elections and Boundaries Commission of Swaziland. He spoke with me from Lubamba. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns that the humanitarian situation in South Sudan remains catastrophic, even though the country is no longer classified as being in a state of famine. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The South Sudanese government and the United Nations declared on June 21st that the famine that had struck parts of Unity State is over. The International Red Cross Federation warns, however, against complacency. The head of the agency's office in South Sudan, Michael Charles, says the situation remains precarious, although famine conditions are no longer present.
We have over 1.7 million people that are at the brink of famine. And really, you know, the lifting of the famine vis-a-vis the emergency phase of food insecurity is very blurry in the eyes of the people that are affected. So whether famine has been lifted technically, but the people haven't really noticed the difference because they still don't have access to food, because the children are still malnourished, because, you know, diseases are still ongoing.
Charles says the humanitarian situation in South Sudan remains dire. South Sudan's famine may be technically over, but he says more than 6 million people across the country are short of food and going hungry. He says 1 million children are acutely malnourished. The Red Cross official says hunger weakens people's ability to fight off disease. He says preventable, treatable diseases such as measles, cholera, and malaria are on the increase and are a potential death sentence for children who are malnourished. Charles says efforts by aid agencies have managed to lift South Sudan out of famine, but he warns that another man-made disaster brought on by conflict could occur if peace efforts make no progress. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we will examine the contributions politicians of African descent are making and changing toward the political realities in the United States. We'll also discuss the new faces arriving on the political landscape on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And it's right now time for music from our African collection.
Like 5 and 6, now your love be the chicken stew on top of my rice and beans. Baby, you my number one, you know, get back to you. got it bummer for me, make it down three. I don't tell you before. Baby, baby, follow me. I don't tell you, make it follow me. Now only you the ginger me. Baby, you can make it follow me. Yeah, hey, yeah, follow me. Don't tell you, make it follow me. Now only you the ginger me. Baby, you can make it follow me. Follow me. Baby, my love is deep. Now you be my missing deep. Baby, down to my creep. Anything you want, I go give. I don't go look for your trouble. Now you when I search for my goggle. See, Oginity, Biko, Biko, baby, Oginity. Because of you, I look at your face. They make me the craze. My love declare like DSTV. Even your friends and the envy. Biko, Biko, give me your heart, oh. Give me your heart. Baby, Biko, Biko, give me your heart, oh. Your heart.
I just wanna be with you. Make it feel like 5 and 6. Now your love be the chicken stew on top of my rice and beans. Baby, you my number one. You know, get back to. Got it bummer for me, make it down three. I don't tell you before. Baby, baby, follow me. I don't tell you, make it follow me. Now only you the ginger me. Baby, you can make it follow me. Mama, she bad. You all all about me, oh. Send a, send a, send a, send a, Rita. She call a, sita. Girlie, I don't be like Panavita. You fix my mouth the world when I'm down, when I'm bitter. Oh, yeah. Booty big like the World Bank. So many girls, when I use me, the one bank. You be the type, and the man go use the one brag. Stop acting funny, baby, have you don't join gang. You go go, you go go, you go go, yeah. I just wanna be with you. Make it feel like 5 and 6. Now your love be the chicken stew on top of my rice and beans. Baby, you my number one. You don't get back to. Got it bummer for me, make it down three. I don't tell you before. Baby, make it follow me. I don't tell you, make it follow me. Now only you the ginger.
Bread. My love, you know they bend. I promise to love you to the end. Be a cocoa, yeah. Be a cigar, to a chain smoker. That's so all you be to me, my lover. Yeah. You give me hangover. I know go dribble you, do you leg over. I don't wanna waste your time. I want you to be mine. Just like star, you shine. Your cocoa, yeah, your life is too short to be alone. Oh, yeah, chop my turkey and give me the bone. I am home alone. Your cocoa, yeah.
Follow me. Don't tell you, make me follow me. Now only you the ginger me. Follow me. Follow me. Don't tell you, make me follow me. Now only you the ginger me. Follow me. Follow me.
Mr. DJ, you too savvy. So pan the silence for this party. This party. Baby girl, make it come to daddy. Make us sip some Hennessy and Bacardi. Bacardi, daddy, go rock you steady. Cause you got me going up, eh.
Now the way you do me, they move me, they make me, they throw, eh. Now the things that you do me, they make me, they want pop rose, eh. As a party starter,
party starter.
I do.
on the place, it no matter. Who you be? Now who will be your father? Rude boy, Mr. P, don't dada. So follow me, baby dada. Daddy want take you up with no ladder. No matter, it no matter. You be the phone, me the charger. Not the way she do me, the movie, they make me the truth. Not the thing we she do me, they make me the one for Rosie.
As the party starts.
To be the one with the wipe those tears from your eyes.
sala popo, honey me. I've been to think about you for real, no be today. I know feel it without you tomorrow, today. You are my miracle, baby. Oh, you don't say after day, yeah. Papa, don't show me the way. If people they ask me, me, I go say, hey, who on your mind? Every time I think about the things you do, call me CC, yeah. Forever and ever, not me and you. We go, I don't want my God. God says we are destined to be together. One of my waters on to my God. In a woo can my God. Baby, you be miracle CC. I defeat, and I be your miracle papa. Baby, say I know I rise again. Every time I think of the things you do, for me, CC, for better, for worse, I go be with you. So be good. I don't want my God. CC, I for again. Explain how I'm breathing. Oh, it's like you took my breath away. But I believe it's good for my body.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaites, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, every smart man is an ignoramus who abuses his ignorance. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa. We'll be right back.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States recognizes the importance of its partnerships with its neighbors and friends in the Western Hemisphere. Our partnerships in this region are vital to our economic competitiveness and our ability to solve our shared security challenges, said U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan at a gathering of the Organization of American States. The United States strongly supports the role of the Organization of American States and is committed to its success. The OAS mission in Colombia plays a critical role in monitoring the implementation of the peace process and ensuring commitments are met. And the U.S. is proud to support the OAS mission against corruption in Honduras and hopes that other nations will demonstrate this type of aggressive anti-corruption effort. With regard to the worsening situation in Venezuela, the United States remains committed to working with OAS member states to help find a peaceful, democratic, and lasting solution to the political and economic crisis there. We've all been alarmed by the dramatic deterioration of democratic norms in Venezuela, as well as the attendant violence in which many people have died, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan. As neighbors and fellow citizens of the Americas, we can no longer stand by and watch this suffering, nor can we ignore the denial of basic freedoms like freedom of assembly, freedom of expression, and political participation. The responsibility falls to us to show the kind of leadership the people of our hemisphere deserve. The United States has joined with the growing number of democracies to urge the Venezuelan government to promptly hold free, fair, and credible elections, respect the Constitution and the National Assembly, provide for the immediate and unconditional release of all political prisoners, and tend to the humanitarian needs of the Venezuelan people. Our common goal remains, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan, to help the people of Venezuela return to peace and prosperity with the full restoration of the rule of law and respect for freedom, political expression, and participation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.